Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Senator Royce DePlessis from District 5. Royce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell.
So, Royce, there's a consideration before you guys in this special session as it stands. The Louisiana Constitution outlaws specific crimes for which the juveniles can be transferred to adult court by a DA. This bill would repeal that and leave it to simply legislative approval, passing a law as to what could or could not be charged. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So what is the thought process behind this? And as this bill, I think it's made its way through the Senate and is headed to the House, right?
Yeah, it passed the Senate last week, and it's actually now being heard right now in House Criminal Justice. So I just want to just set the framework, because if you're asking me what the intent or the thinking is behind the bill, I really don't get it, because we are in the middle of a special session on tax reform. Okay, so we're already debating trying to change the economic climate in the state of Louisiana, but now we have this constitutional amendment where we had a crime session in January. So I don't really understand why this is being pushed at this time. We know that the violent crime across the board, across the nation, is down. We know violent juvenile crime is down. So when the questions were asked as to why this is being brought at this particular time, I didn't really get any good answers. But I do have my concerns, and we can certainly go through that. As you already pointed out, there are 15 crimes already enumerated in the Louisiana Constitution, everything from first-degree murder to second-degree kidnapping, that a young person under the age of 17, because we just raised the age during the crime session, so DAs already have wide discretion to charge people under the age of 17 as adults in the criminal justice system. And it just in January, we reversed the raise the age law, which brought the age from 18 down to 17, where you're automatically treated as an adult in the criminal justice system. So I don't really understand what the need is for this, and why we would take this out of the Constitution when we should be focusing on tax reform, which is my focus.
So you said that there are additional concerns. What are they?
The concerns with respect to removing this from the Constitution?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I think we have to just question why it was originally placed in the Constitution. So the people of Louisiana, starting back in 1974, and there were a few amendments after that, felt that it was important enough to put these crimes in the Constitution because we have two systems. We have an adult system and we have a juvenile system. And I want to be crystal clear that violent offenses, serious crimes, need to be taken seriously, and there must be accountability. It needs to be swift. It needs to be certain. But when you have two systems, this amendment, in my opinion, it basically does away with that, because I think this is a pathway to say we don't need to have a juvenile system anymore. We're going to just basically turn it over to the legislature. We don't know who's going to be here at 5, 10, 20 years to be able to just add any crime statutorily without having to go through the people. So then you basically say, well, what's the point of having two systems? We're just going to treat everybody as an adult, no matter what the age is or no matter what the crime is. So that's my concern.
Yeah, I mean, the timing of it is one thing, but I'm kind of curious, like, when you go through the list, you know, there's a number of crimes that I would think you'd want to see in there, like human trafficking. You know, there's this new move afoot now to hold the district, the individual responsible for distribution of, you know, OxyContin, fentanyl, or whatever
it may be. Let's add those to the ballot. Let's just add those to the Constitution.
You know, so I mean,
I think you can add those, but to remove them all and just make it all statutory, that process, in my opinion, is what we have a concern with. And when we ask the questions from the bill,
all the other crimes are statutory, though, right? In the adult world,
by law. But again, just making the point that I just made, if we take them out of the Constitution, we're basically saying that we don't really see a difference between the adult system and the juvenile system. The DAs didn't ask for this, as far as I don't know of any DAs that have asked for this, and maybe some have, but I'm not aware that the DAs Association came and asked for this. We've gotten word from the sheriff in Orleans Parish, who talked about the concerns from a cost standpoint. You have to, even though you have young people who are under the age of 18 being housed with adults, they still have to be separated because they're under the age of 18 due to federal law. So these are additional costs, additional logistical concerns that the Orleans Parish Sheriff has with this proposal. And that's already under the current law of reversing raise the age. Again, we want accountability. We need accountability. But I don't know where we're really going with this, because there was no data provided, no statistics provided, no real good argument that was made as to why we need this. And all I'm saying is, if we're going to take this out of the Constitution, let's at least have a compelling argument as to why we should have it. And I didn't hear that. And again, this is all during the middle of a special session on tax reform. And we just had a special session on crime in January, where we reversed, where we lowered the age back to 17. It just doesn't make sense at all.
And I tend to agree with you, Senator, because I don't think, you know, we're really engaging in enough debate here on these issues, because we don't have enough time. First, we don't have enough time as it relates to the tax reform package, and then you start throwing in these one-offs. There's even less time there. I'm just kind of curious. I'm not exactly 100% confident that we actually have a juvenile system, because it's left to the complete discretion of the respective juvenile courts across the state. They have a much broader discretion framework than any other court in the state of Louisiana. And who goes to jail, who goes where, and who gets what as it relates to services, there is little or no consistency there, which I always believe leads to disproportionate impact, disparate treatment, and we get caught up in the quagmire of that legitimate issue, and we lose sight of what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Your thoughts?
Fair point, and I think there's absolutely room for debate and obvious room for improvement in our juvenile system, but that's not what's happening in this constitutional amendment.
So we can
work on improving the courts. We can work on improving what happens when young people are detained, when they are brought before a juvenile judge. We can work on improving that, but no disagreement there at all, Newell. I'm just saying, in this amendment, it's fragmented. It doesn't have any real data to support it. There doesn't seem to be much of a unified or consistent voice around why it's needed. I'm here to be proven wrong, but I just haven't heard anything from those who are pushing for this huge constitutional amendment as to why it's needed at this time, especially given the fact that we just had a crime session in January. We lowered the age to 17. Trends are down right now. Why would we take such a drastic step? So we can work on doing more to hold the juvenile justice system accountable. This amendment, in my opinion, does not do that.
Yeah. Let's pivot to the tax reform that's going on now. I mean, are you hearing much from your constituents?
I'm hearing a whole lot. I will tell you, Newell, I'm getting a lot of calls, a lot of emails, people in the grocery store, people in the neighborhood. Unfortunately, I have not had anybody from my district to reach out to me to tell me to support any of the measures that are being put forward. Generally, I am in full support of doing everything we can to try to improve the business climate here in Louisiana. And we know that tax policy is a huge component of that. But most of the proposals right now that are being floated pose a danger to many industries that are thriving in New Orleans, as well as just everyday people who are just working, small business owners, people who are just, trying to do their part. So a lot of concerns. The bills just made their way to the Senate. Senate Rev and Fisk met yesterday and today. So we're just now getting the bills. Some have been amended. Some are likely going to be amended. So I don't know what it's going to look like when it reaches the finish line.
Well, so I'm kind of curious. I mean, being a number cruncher in my previous life and a tax collector, I have tried to do a number of back of envelope calculations as to, at what level of income does someone really benefit from this, of the expanded sales tax base versus a flat tax on state income. If you look at the folks that are on Social Security, there is no state income tax paid on that. So it seems to me they're kind of behind the eight ball. The only thing that they would measure against would be whatever savings they have on prescription drugs, and not all jurisdictions tax prescription drugs. Is there anybody doing these calculations for y'all? I mean, is anybody empowering y'all with data as to where people would actually fall out here? Because I'm getting a lot of calls on the show. Folks are trying to do their own calculations, and I said, I think I'm a loser. I wish somebody would give me some data.
Yeah. Look, there is a provision in there. There are some pieces of it that I do like. I like the idea of making the teacher pay raise permanent. That would be something we don't have to come and debate every year. There's a doubling of the standard deduction for retired people. But most of the constituencies that I've heard from, and you have a lot of them out there, they don't really see a whole lot of gain. Obviously, the folks are on the higher end, they're going to stand to see a big benefit, as well as a lot of your out-of-town corporations. And there are some pieces to the current tax scheme that are not great when you talk about taxing inventory on companies that don't have a high revenue. They could be taking a loss currently, so we can see how we can fix that. But to your point, we are getting a lot of data. We got staff that crunches numbers from us. You have special interest groups that crunch numbers. And I can't see that there's been a whole lot of inconsistency with what we've been getting. But with every different amendment or proposal, whether it's to extend implementation or to lower the percentage of a sales tax from 0.45 to 0.4, that throws the entire puzzle off. So you got to look at this as like a big puzzle. And each Sure. piece has to fit in order for this thing to even come close to being revenue neutral. And that's our big concern, that if we support this package to lower the income tax, to lower the corporate income, to lower the corporate franchise rate, that's great. But down the road, are we going to be in a situation where revenue is so short that now we have to make cuts? And that's everybody's big concern. That's my number one concern. And I don't want to be loading up more taxes on your lawn care person, the beautician, or the barber, or any of these new additional services that are currently not being taxed that will be taxed in as a way to try to make up for lost revenue.
Well, my concern really is for local government. And, you know, the thing is, and I think you would agree, local government moves the quality of your life, you know, one degree left or right, more so than any other level of government, more so than the state, more so than the Fed. And if local government is not revenue neutral on this, that causes me some serious concern. And again, from a local government perspective, being the former tax collector, I know a little bit more than most. I can't figure out that they're going to come out on the plus side. You know, some of this expanded sales tax base sounds great, but the collection effort to go get that money of folks that have never paid, that's going to be quite a task for local government. And I made this observation the other day. We're not going to know whether or not it works for about 2 years from today. You know what the interesting thing is about 2 years from today? You and others are going to be running for re-election. And when this comes back to roost, where local government is starting to make cuts because this is not reached or achieved the levels that they thought it would, I think there's going to be a price to be paid for a whole lot of folks. And that's why kind of curious about these back-of-the-envelope calculations. Are we sure? You know, because we're almost betting on the come of an expansive business base moving here. I don't necessarily agree. I mean, I watched that as a tax collector from 1994 to 2017 when I left. I was responsible for that, you know, and looked at it every day as the CFO to 2017 when I left the sheriff's office. I didn't see ever a period of huge expansion by the movement of taxes or otherwise throughout that period. Not only here, but I really didn't see it around the country, with some few exceptions. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on too long.
Yeah, no, Newell, you're right on target. I don't know what it looks like for Jefferson, but the numbers that we got for New Orleans are $38 million in terms of loss. That's the predicted loss that the city of New Orleans has given us. So I don't know what that would look like for the different jurisdictions across the state, but that's the number that I've been provided. And who knows? It could be more than that.
Yeah, I would suspect that it's more than that, because I don't think, they must be assuming that they're going to be able to collect on this expansive number. And
right.
Collection efforts are hard, especially new collection efforts on somebody who traditionally and historically not paid sales taxes.
Yeah, I don't even know how you set that system up in a way that's fair, where this broadening of the tax base, you have all of these folks who's never paid this. They would, I don't know if they would have to go out and hire an accountant or hire a lawyer. All these new rules they have to comply with. And then the city would have to have a system in place to be able to go collect it. I think it was setting a lot of people up for failure.
Let me ask you this question. You know, there's been a lot of chatter, probably at least since you've been in the Senate and even before, about streamlining tax collection, right? But what's interesting to me, we quickly moved to a provision of opting in or opting out on inventory taxes. That seems to me to just make things more complicated, not more streamlined. Have y'all had a discussion about that?
Yeah, like I said, the bills just got to the Senate. I haven't been part of that discussion publicly, but that was the first question that I asked, too. I've been up here now a little bit over 6 years, and there's been an effort for several of those years to try to centralize the sales tax collection. It hasn't been successful, but it seems like we were moving in one direction, and this definitely moves us in another direction, where they're saying we would just give it to the locals for you to decide. That certainly goes into the opposite direction of the centralized sales tax. Now, the city of New Orleans, again, has always been opposed to the idea of centralizing sales tax or giving up that power to the state of Louisiana. other sheriffs, other tax collectors throughout the state may have some different views on it. But
I'm opposed
by making
to
the
it.
Inventory. Yeah,
I was opposed to it then, and I'm still opposed to it now because I don't think they provided data to support what they say it'll accomplish. But be that as it may.
Right.
So I was just kind of curious whether or not they're going to look into that.
Some of the same folks that are pushing for the centralization are now saying, well, we would leave it up to the locals on the inventory. I don't see how that's consistent.
That's not consistent at all.
from
my perspective, it's going to be interesting. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I did ask you if it was okay to talk about the tax plan because that wasn't what we were originally set for, and I appreciate your willingness to do so.
I appreciate your willingness to have me on, Newell.
Well, thank you so much, sir, and we'll do it again soon. Royce DuPlessis, state senator. District 5, state of Louisiana. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW. The ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, joins us. This is 2 weeks in a row, Jeff, that we have a positive outcome to talk about.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. We're back, baby.
With a vengeance.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I have a pair of Saints socks that I wore in week 6 and 7, and I started to feel like I was the reason that they were losing because I changed up what I was doing, and so I didn't wear them. But, you know, I needed more evidence, so I wore them this week, and I think the magic is back. The Saints socks are back in the rotation. I feel personally responsible for the win this week, and we'll go from there.
Forget about the performance of both Derek Carr and Taysom Hill. It's all about you, baby.
Oh, it's the socks. It's always the socks.
It was actually, I watched the entire game, no interruptions. That's unusual. It was a good game. It was interesting. They kept it interesting throughout. I thought they played really, really well, and the stats kind of bear that out.
Yeah, and you know, this is the second game in a row that the Saints have won that, you know, I didn't think it was perfect. You know, there was adversity. They left a lot of points on the board in the first half, right?
Yes,
you know, the
yes,
fumble by Taysom Hill in the red zone. You know, they were in field goal range when they decided to go on fourth down. They ended up getting a penalty, so they had to punt. So you're talking a minimum of 6 points there in a game that ended up tied 14-14 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, what we talked about last week is what was most encouraging is, you know, how you bounce back from some of those issues, some of those mistakes, and closed out the game in the fourth quarter. And that's been the message that Darren Rizzi and the coaches and the players really have been preaching is finish. And for a second consecutive week, the Saints defense shut out the other team in the fourth quarter, and they went and they won the game. And, you know, you'll win a lot of NFL games. You watch, you go around the NFL, right, and you look at the teams that win the most often, the teams that find their way. You know, look at the Chiefs, right? the Chiefs aren't blowing the teams out week in, week out. They actually lost this week for the first time. But they're winning the fourth quarter in almost every one of their games. Obviously, they lost to the Bills yesterday. But you know, they're not dominating games quarters one through three. They're dominating the fourth quarter. And if the Saints can continue to do that like they did yesterday and like they did last week, you're going to win a lot of football games. And for a long time, the Saints were a team that did that with Drew and Alvin and Sean. And it feels like over the last 3 years, you haven't seen as much of that. But that's why these last two games have been so gratifying, because, you know, it's not like you got out to a big lead and you nursed it and you backed into a win. It's not like you had to rally from 10 points down. You went out and won a game, a close game in the fourth quarter. And, you know, that's what makes it so exciting.
I really like the balance, passing yards 259, rushing 214. Anytime we get to 200 rushing, I know you sports guys, y'all are excited like I am.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, one of my big critiques coming to that Falcons game was I thought Clint Kubiak got a little bit lost in the Taysom Hill part of the game, right? Like, and we saw this happen to Pete Carmichael, a guy who was very, very familiar, had years of experience kind of incorporating Taysom Hill into game plans. But then you would watch a game and how it played out and kind of the game flow, and you would notice, oh, wow, Taysom Hill hasn't got a touch in two full quarters. What's the deal? And so, I was hoping that going into this game, they would kind of see that and correct it. Because if you look at the Falcons game, you peppered Taysom Hill with touches over the first two possessions. And then he didn't touch the ball again until the final drive in the fourth quarter, right, inside the two-minute warning. In this game, there was a very clear emphasis on getting Taysom the ball early and often. This may have been a career. I have to go back and check. I would imagine this is a career high in touches for him. He had 8 catches for 50 yards. 7 carries for 100-something, 140-something yards and 2 touchdowns. And, the game feels a lot easier when you're able to rip off chunk plays like that. And even with the turnovers, you know, Taysom was very upset at halftime about the fumble, about the interception. But it tells you just how dominant of a game that he had, that we're not talking about those plays, right? Like, those plays don't really even factor into the final result because of how impactful he was. And, you know, when he's able to run the ball, life gets easier on Alvin. Life gets easier on Derek, who I think Derek Carr has had 2 excellent weeks at the quarterback position. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, over 500 yards, 70% completions. He's only taken 1 sack, and even that one was kind of not really a sack. It was the guy at the defensive end getting his hand in and knocking the ball out, and he did. And Derek recovered that. That was the sack. He didn't even take a hit. You know, it was a game he went against Myles Garrett, and I think he ended the game with, like, 2 pressures. This is one of the best defensive ends of all time, not just in the NFL, like, to ever do it. And you were able to erase him from the game plan. So, yeah, I think the Saints executed very well. And it's easy to forget. They don't have playmakers, right? They don't have either of their top 2 wide receivers out there, and they're still getting the job done. So, yeah, the offensive performance, I think that is the formula for the Saints team to win games, is to run the ball like that, get Taysom Hill involved, hit big plays when they're there to be made, and, just keep winning.
I don't know about you, and this is going to sound crazy, but one of the highlights of Derek Carr's performance yesterday is he threw the ball away like almost every time that he absolutely needed to avoid taking a sack, taking a loss, or knowing and recognizing immediately that the play was not developing and it was never going to develop. It had collapsed from the very beginning, and he just got rid of the ball.
Yeah, you know, DeMario Davis, you know, compared him to Rajon Rondo, who, played for the Pelicans. He played for a lot of teams. And just in terms of being a point guard, like being that elite kind of ball distributor, getting the ball where it needs to go, making the right decision over and over and over again. And that's what you need your quarterback to be able to do is, you know, you don't have to hit big plays every time, but eliminating bad plays, eliminating negative plays, it can be just as valuable, right? Like, ending up in second and 8 instead of 2nd and 15 because, you know, you took a big sack, right? Or you found a check down instead of, you know, putting the ball in danger over the middle of the field and kind of live to play another down. You know, that drive where the game was 14-14, I felt like it was slipping away from them at a certain point in that game, and Derek just found a way. And I truly mean that. Like, plays broke down. And there was one play that he was scrambling and he just found Taysom. He was not the primary on that play and he just got it to him for a first down. Foster Moreau, we found several times, you know, in big moments. There was one play that I watched Jordan Mims. He looked like he was the primary. They were kind of setting up a screen, and then he and Cesar Ruiz kind of ran into each other. So that play was dead, and he just looks down. He finds Taysom, right? And he turns a what would be a negative play into a positive play. And when Derek is playing well, that's what he's doing, right? He's not blowing you away on a stat line. He's just making good plays and avoiding negative plays. He has not put the ball in danger, and that's what I think really stood out in that game, which, you know, you got to give Jameis Winston credit too. I mean, we can talk about Derek. I thought Jameis played one of his best games as a pro. I mean, he was yeah. dealing in that game. You know, he came out a little hot. Like, I think he was a little fired up, and he was airmailing some passes early over his receivers. But then he locked in. I mean, 395 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. He didn't really, you know, there were a couple potential interceptions, but they weren't like, you know, the God's plan throws that we grew accustomed to Jameis. He did have an intentional grounding on a 2-point conversion attempt, which is honestly kind of hilarious. I've never seen that in the NFL because the sack doesn't matter.
Yeah.
In a 2-point conversion scenario, there's no reason to throw it away,
right.
Which is just kind of quintessential Jameis Winston. Like, he does stuff that you're just like, okay. But, you know, like, he's not the reason the Browns lost that game, right? He kept them in that game. And so, you know, the Saints needed every bit of it, even though it looks like 21 points on the scoreline, like, looks like they kind of ran away with it, which they did at the end. But that was very much a game, and you needed the strong performances from Derek and Taysom, so that's what you got.
Jeff, help me out here. Last week, was it 3 field goals missed?
I believe so.
By the Falcons?
Younghoe Koo, he missed his first one. It was a longer one. They blocked the second one, which was a short one, and then he missed another kind of like 40-something yarder.
So 3 missed.
So, yeah, 3
two,
misses.
Two or three missed in this game. I don't remember.
There were 2, but it's kind of confusing because he missed the first one, right? And then this is Dustin Hopkins we're talking about. Then he missed the second one from 43 yards, I believe. But there was a holding call on Peyton Turner, so that one didn't count. It still missed.
Right.
And so, you know, the confidence level in your kicker is certainly not high. And then, you know, they get it in closer, and I think it's a 27-yarder that they missed. So, yeah, if you want to add it up, it's 5 of the last 6 field goals attempted by opponents in the Caesars Superdome have not gone through the upright.
So Rizzi has, like, this special teams voodoo thing or something working right now.
It sure feels like that. It really does. Like, if you told me that they turned up the air conditioning and it's blowing harder the last couple weeks, like, I'd believe you because it's bizarre. What Darren would say, and Darren keeps going back to this, and there might be some truth to it. I think he may be just trying to pull some positivity out of the Saints' performance in what is otherwise really just good luck. And he would point to the rush, right? He feels like the rush the Saints are getting on these kick attempts is getting in the head of the kicker a little bit and helping. And they did block one, so it's not completely, you know, just nothing. I mean, they are getting there. They're getting close. And, you know, it's impossible to know how much a rush might impact the kicker in his process. But that's what Darren would say, is it's not some sort of just, you know, voodoo that he's put on opposing kickers in the dome, that the Saints defense or the Saints special teamers are putting in a lot of effort and they're putting in a lot of energy to make these kicks more difficult by getting in their vision and getting their hands up. And either way, yeah, I think the Saints will take, considering how many, it seemed like we went years without anyone missing a kick in the dome. And so I think maybe that's just that karma is leveling out a little bit now.
And then interesting about this game, we didn't even I don't think we even tried a field goal, did we? I don't think
so. The one that I think they probably should have tried, they were at like the 34, 35-yard line, and that's the one I was talking about that, you know, they went for it, and Derek actually completed it to Foster, but there was a hold, I believe, and then
which was
coming back.
A hell of a catch, too. And he went out for a little while, right? You know, yeah, it was funny. I didn't mean to focus on the field goal thing, but I remember at some point I got up, I was barbecuing burgers, and I went to check on the burger. It was like a 20-something yard field goal that Cleveland was lining up for. Went in, came out, expected it to, you know, the 3 points to be on the board. And I looked at my wife and my mother-in-law. They missed?
I mean, it's like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like I can make a 27-yard field goal. Like, I could do that. Now, 100% of the time, no. But if you gave me 10 tries, I'd knock it through there a good percentage of them. Like, it's shorter than an extra point, which should be a 99% scenario for an NFL kicker. It is unheard of to miss a kick like that. You mentioned Foster Moreau had that nice catch that he went down, hurt his shoulder, came back in the game. Thought he had an excellent game. And I'm just going to kind of run through one more. Pete Werner played this game with a club on his hand. He had surgery, broke his hand against the Falcons, his right hand. He had surgery. This is something DeMario Davis told us after the game. He had some sort of metal equipment inserted in there. He practiced on Friday with that club. He told DeMario that it felt like when he would impact something, it felt like he was punching a brick wall. Like, that's the level of pain he was dealing with. So he deserves a ton of credit. I think the term DeMario uses, Walker Texas Ranger toughness, and that's a good way to describe it. So I think Pete Werner deserves a lot of credit and praise for the toughness he showed kind of working through that.
Great team effort for sure, and obviously Pete playing with that and playing through the pain is something that we should recognize as well. But just a lot of fun. We're off next week. Probably couldn't have happened at a better time because we lost our center yet again. we're just having no luck from an injury standpoint on the front line, right?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think they were being more proactive with Eric more than anything else. Darren said he probably could have gone back in if they needed him to. I think with the bye coming up and knowing that he is coming up that groin injury surgery, I think they were just playing it safe. We'll learn more today. We're talking to Darren this afternoon. I expect we'll get more information on that. So I'm hopeful that he'll be back by the time they come and play the Rams.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Jeff Nowak, WWL, Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Always appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week.
You too, Noel. Thanks.
All righty. Look, we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Got a bunch of texts. We played a two-win team. Yeah, I get it. I mean, we're trying to get excited about something. We're excited that there's momentum, that we're moving in a better direction than we did before. I understand we didn't play a Super Bowl-bound team. We didn't play one of the teams in the top 20% of the NFL. I got it. We're just taking a much more simplistic approach, folks. We're just trying to create a little bit of excitement around here. Hope, it's been an up and down season. We've had challenges. We've had a lot of things going on. No one to blame. Just, not playing the blame game. Just want to be excited about winning. I wish the same would happen for LSU. Tulane absolutely destroyed Navy. Secured themselves a place in the championship game with Army. Excited about that too. Wishing that everybody played well, whether it's Nichols or La Tech or UL or whoever else, Southeastern. Just excited for the wins. That's all this is about. We don't have to really get too deep in the woods and too serious about this. A win is always better than a loss, no matter who the opposing players are, right? And yes, you got another one that wants to remind me that we lost to the Panthers. I got it. We got it. We're just trying to move on. You put that behind you, you look to the future. We have an off week. We can regroup, hopefully, maybe change a few things, maybe not. Come back, play the Rams on December 1st at 3:05 p.m. Then we head up to New York, then back here, and we'll see Mr. Daniels with the Washington Commanders. And then we head up to chilly Green Bay, back to play Las Vegas here on the 29th of December. And on January 5th, we're out at Tampa to finish out the season. A lot of football left is all I'm saying. And we just keep our fingers crossed and hope that we can just keep putting some notches in the win column for sure. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.